males are born, men are built. This is the Great Man Podcast, where we want you to build great men as you allow other men to build you. Join New York Times best-selling author Stephen Mansfield, along with seasoned leaders of men, Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow, as we bring a wide range of experience and expertise to help you become the great man you are designed to be. With you this week are Anthony Flemons and JT McCrow.
Mr. McCraw.
Gentlemen, let us begin today. Hey, what a great topic.
Great as in quotations great, or great like you're ready to get into it?
Yeah, no, I think this is one that men do not think about.
Most men don't want to think about it at all.
That's true.
Let alone discuss it.
And I think it depends on age. Yeah. So I think as people get older in life, they start thinking about these things. But when they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, I mean, it's blowing and going and, you know, just I'm invincible and nothing's ever going to happen. But that's not true.
You know, it was quite different for me. And I've said this and I'll rehash an old story, but I thought about it a lot in my 20s because of the way that I was living, man.
Yeah, you could be dead any day, of course.
And every morning that I woke up and every morning that I grabbed the things that I grabbed to go out and do the work that I did, I was like, man, I need to watch myself. I need to watch the people around me. I need to be aware of what's going on because I could die today.
Today, yeah, I could
die today. And I told you, man, that I was always shocked, man, when I made it out of my 20s. I was like, man, how did that happen? Like, how did I get past all that drama in my life? But I thought about it a lot growing up.
Yeah.
And I guess it was because of the way that I live. But traditionally, man, like, say my son right now at 24 years old, I don't think that he contemplates leaving this earth at all.
Yeah. And why would they think that? Because they're young. But, you know, we should say this before we get started. I mean, I love our format of the Great Man Podcast.
Sure.
1 week we have the talk with Stephen Mansfield, and he does about a 30,000 foot kind of in general subject. And then Anthony and I come in the next week and take it down to practical. How can you build this into your life?
6 feet in your face.
Yeah. That's a good way to say it. 6 feet into your face. Did you just come up with that?
Yeah.
I mean, you're usually not that creative, so that's great. I
already got the domain name.
Yeah, don't worry about there. It. Helpabrother.com. So, yeah. And I have that too, just in case you want to go. Anyway, but it is a great format. I've talked to several people, you know, over the past several months, and they really like the format to where they can think about it at 30,000 feet and then, well, how can I apply that? And that's where you and I come in, because we're not as smart as Stephen.
Absolutely. Sure.
And I don't even pretend to be, but I think that we are practical.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just two guys trying to live this with every other man out there. How do you apply these principles into your life? So,
yeah,
but this was a great one.
You know,
really thinking and considering about death, and that's not a morbid thing. It's a mindset thing.
Mm.
And again, we're not going to be morbid, but it is a mindset that I believe that we need to consider, because really part of being a great man is making sure that you're not just leaving a legacy of things or finances or wisdom, but you're not leaving a legacy of having my wife and kids deal with things that I should have dealt with when I was alive.
Yeah. So one step beyond, I don't know what's out there. I don't know what's going to happen when I die. So one step beyond that, what's your greatest concern about dying and what you leave behind? Like, just if you had to boil it down to two or three things, what are your concerns about, hey, I'm going to die and this is going to happen, or I'm going to die and that won't happen? You got any of those, man?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Did your wife give you that question, or did you come with that on your own? No,
I've been sitting in my car for an hour and a half listening, man, thinking about this.
You know, I mean, obviously, I think I'm pretty common when it comes to concern of, did I do everything necessary not to leave my wife in a bind?
Mm.
You know, they're already dealing with grief
of
loss. I mean, hopefully she's not excited that, you know, you passed.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother podcast. Yeah, but I think it's just not leaving her with things that I could have taken care of. And am I thinking of those things? Which I'm probably not.
Yeah.
That's where Stephen was saying, go to the control room and consider areas of your life and are they in order? Because I do have kind of, I don't want to call it a fear, but maybe it's a reality that have I done things that my wife shouldn't deal with if I were to happen to die?
Yeah. Do you have another one? Another concern, fear, angst?
That I didn't tell my kids I love them or appreciated them enough.
Man, that's great.
Yeah, probably.
That, what about another one?
Yeah, did I do things that I wish my father would have done?
Ooh.
Probably is the best way to say it. Financially, probably for me, is did I leave them in a situation to where they don't have to worry about finances, you know, within the first 6 months to a year, you know, and hopefully beyond that.
You know,
hopefully I've set my wife up enough and my family up enough to where money is not the concern for a season, but just having the space to grieve and to kind of figure life out without me. I think that's probably a fear that I have that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And so hopefully I'm taking steps to.
I'm going
to
push you one step further than that, because that's a good one. And everybody won't be in the situation to leave their family financially sound or financially set or financially taken care of. But there are some things that we can do to relieve them of the debt of, say, our funeral expenses and all those kinds of things. Sure. So beyond those three, is there one more? And I'm not looking for a certain thing, but I'm just pushing you a little bit further. Beyond those three.
I mean, honestly, for me,
yeah.
Did I leave them? And of course, we're Christian.
Sure.
I'm a Christian man.
Yeah.
I'm definitely a man of faith. Did I leave them with the proper worldview to where they can critically think the rest of their life?
Man, that's great.
And make decisions. You know, did I lay that foundation? I'm not so sure that I have in a lot of areas. Now, I know that I have in certain areas because it's proven out, you know, as they grow older. But yeah, I think that I'm thinking about that a lot more lately.
Yeah.
You know, not just finances. Look, I mean, I learned a long time ago, finances come and they go.
Yeah.
You can make a lot of money. You can lose a lot of money. Emotional capital, you know, that's what you put into the bank and that's going to grow, so to speak. So am I emotionally being there for my children? Or am I just shut off? And then spiritually, that's a big deal. You know, what did I leave them spiritually? Did I leave them a critical way of thinking that they can be bombarded by what I feel this world brings you? And then you can get through that because you've learned to, you have a solid foundation in your belief. Man, I hope I've done that. I'm not so sure that I have, but.
Man, that's great. Well, memento mori.
Yeah, I love that.
Memento mori.
You know, it made me think, by the way, and, you know, back in the day, and when I say that, I mean, back in the, you know, 1200s, all the way, that churches used to have cemeteries on property that you actually walked to the front door and there were tombstones on each side.
We talked about this the other day, man, and I haven't really seen it that way. I've seen burial grounds on the side and behind, but it's interesting when you said that the burial grounds would be in the front and you literally had to walk through them to get into the church.
Yeah, because they wanted you to think about mortality.
Man, that's crazy.
And that's because, again, it's a mindset. And now, today, we have cemeteries that are off the beaten path. Mm-hmm. You have to go there.
Hidden behind, you know, the church, hidden or behind, off-site.
Or off-site or what. And, you know, have you ever been to Arlington?
I have, yeah. I actually have.
It's a pretty sobering place.
It is, and it is laid out pristinely. And like everything is in its place.
And it does make you think about your own mortality. And I do like the fact that, and I wish we could go back to it, where cemeteries were prominent, because I do think it's important that you do think about death. And like Stephen said, because it makes you make different choices now. It makes you at least consider it. Like, I am going to die. And if you're listening to this podcast in this episode and you don't think you're going to die.
Nobody thinks that, man.
I mean, well, let me say it this way. Nobody thinks they're going to die tomorrow.
Yeah, now that's a different story.
Nobody thinks that, you know, car wrecks are for other people. I just read an obituary this morning of a 17-year-old girl. Mm. So look, things happen. Life is not fair. You know, we do things, we consume things, we are around things that can bring harm to us and unbeknownst to us even can take our lives.
Yeah. I promise you, I'm going to let you get into this. And I keep seeing you look at your notes, man. And I know that you got a direction.
I don't have any notes. I'm looking at a picture of my wife.
Okay. Hey, man, but just growing up, and I know that you're from a rural area, man, and you're from Kentucky, and possibly this may be a rural thing or maybe it's a ethnic thing. I don't know. But growing up, man, when there was a death and like the what do they call it when you go around and observe the body just and spend time around the body? What's it called?
Like a visitation?
No.
Awake?
Awake.
Yeah.
So when you were growing up and as a small child, do you remember people having wakes and where did they have them? Did they have them at the funeral home or did they have them at their personal home?
Yeah. So I had an interesting upbringing because neither one of my parents liked funerals at all.
Why do you think that was?
It's a great question. I'm not sure, but yeah. I can remember on many occasions, you know, not going up to view the body mm-hmm. when they had an open casket, because I would hear my parents say, that's not how I want to remember them. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I still do not go up
really?
To open casket. No, I mean,
you're going to come up to my casket, dude.
No,
come on, man.
No, man.
Come see me, man. I'm going to be having my tongue sticking out looking at you.
No, if they don't have a certain smirk on your face, I'll say that ain't real. But my best friend's mother just passed away weeks ago. And I did the same thing. I've known her since I was 10 years old and she was like a second mom to me growing up. And I just something in me, I'm not going to go up and view that because I don't want that to be the last memory I have.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask, man, is because I was thinking on the drive over, man, about historically death and all these things. And I was remembering the first death that I saw and the second death and the third death. But I remember specifically when I was 10 or 12 years old, man, going to one of my friend's houses and walking past, it would be like their formal dining room.
Yeah.
And seeing a casket.
Yeah, for sure.
In the house. And I've not known that to be like commonplace, but I know that it happens. And it was just sitting there for anybody that wanted to come over and view the body or see the body.
Yeah.
And life was going on in the other rooms. And I walked by and I looked and I was like, wow, what is that?
Yeah.
And then I walked over and he's all made up and in the casket and it was their grandfather. And I looked at that and then we went on and nobody came to me to explain it. The kid that I was at his house didn't mention it, even though he saw me walk over. It was just, hey, it's there. Deal with it. And now let's go on. And I thought it was curious, man, that, wow, they brought the body here to the home in case somebody wanted to come over and view.
Yeah, and I think the point of what Stephen was saying is at some point, whether it's a funeral home, whether it's a church, whether it's someone's house, you're going to end up there.
Yeah.
So how did you prepare for your exit?
Yeah.
And meaning, did you prepare well so that the people that you love can only deal with the grief of you being gone and not the grief of you being gone plus, I don't have my finances in order. Mm-hmm. I don't have relationships that are reconciled in order. I don't have all these other things in order. I think that's the point. We're all going to end up in a casket, every one of us.
Yeah.
So what did you do? I heard a preacher one time talk about that you're on your tombstone is going to be your birth and your death. And there's going to be a dash in the middle. And the dash is the most important. And so what did you do with the dash? What did you do during that time of your life? It's real short on the tombstone, but it's obviously longer in your life. And so I think that was the point. As men, are we preparing ourselves? And I know it sounds morbid, but it's really not. It's just a mindset of I need to prepare myself for death. I need to prepare my family for death. And that's not a conversation over dinner with macaroni and cheese, by the way.
Right.
I mean, that's just something I do. For instance, I mean, in the last couple of years, we've set up a couple of trusts. And those trusts make you think through everything.
Right.
So who gets what? Who's in control of what? And I think it was a very important process that my wife and I went through together because she knows now, I know now what happens when one of us dies.
In regards to setting up trust, I've heard it said, you know, own nothing, control everything.
Yeah, that's exactly why I like it.
Yeah.
Because, and again, it's not about money. It's more of a, about a mindset. But I do think that as you grow in your finances, there are different things that you can put in order
to protect them,
to protect yourself.
Yeah, and to protect those.
And we just got to that level where, you know, a trust seems to be the most practical thing for my business and for my personal. So I have both that I know that when I die, that there's no question about what's going to happen. Now, what we didn't do was like, this is what I want my funeral to look like, or this is who I want to speak. Or
I thought about that on the drive over today too, man. Look,
I'm not going to speak. I know you're going to ask me to. I'm not doing it.
Yeah, you are.
So I'm not going to sing. I know you desperately
you,
want me
will
to.
Will you play the piano, dude?
I'll play the piano. All right. Yeah, that's the easy part.
All right.
Because I can cry and nobody will see me.
Yeah.
But I do think practically, how can we as men set our families up to succeed in our death?
So the number one
thing—that's a weird way to say it. By the way,
so the number one thing in setting our families up to not have to worry about as much as they don't have to worry about, the number one thing is what?
Make a will.
Make a will.
It's the most practical. I told you this that I know a lot of NFL guys.
Mm-hmm.
This tells you it's not about money; it's about mindset.
Right.
Millionaires, and they die without a will, and they leave their family fighting, literally fighting in court for what they had, their estate.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible position to put your family into.
Steven says he's known lawyers who you think, man, they know everything. They know all the ins and outs. They are taking care of everything. They have admins. They have assistants.
Everything.
They have legal counselors. They have everything. But he's known lawyers to die and not having a simple like a simple will, not a detailed will, just a simple will done and leaves their family in turmoil.
I mean, and it could be as simple as when I die, everything goes to my wife.
Right. And have it notated.
It could be that simple to where kids are not fighting over things. Mm-hmm. Or if you don't have a spouse, let's say when I die, a fourth of whatever,
right.
I got four kids, a fourth goes to everybody, whatever. I mean, it just, you want to be able, when you're in your right mind, to make good, solid, wisdom-filled decisions on where you want your things to go to. And it just, I'm telling you right now, man, it saves relationships.
Have you discussed at all with your family or with your wife, like your deathbed directive, like a directive as far as do not resuscitate, only 1 week, any of that kind of stuff? As far as a directive.
So you jumped because that's number two, actually.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So I'm on
track with you.
Yeah. I was thinking about this. So number one would be a living will. Number two is your healthcare directive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does that look like? So I knew going through this past year when my mother was not doing well, she passed away in April. I knew what she wanted and what she didn't want. So it just helped me make decisions that could have been very emotionally charged with everybody involved, but yet I knew her wishes. So she had a do not resuscitate. She had a, you know, she had all these things that she, that were in place that it was very honestly kind of the decisions had been made for me to just fulfill. So there were some little small decisions in there that I had to make along the way. That everything wasn't spelled out, but because she had spelled those things out, it kind of helped me decide the other things.
Gave you a bigger direction to know where she was at.
That's a great way to say it. It gave me a direction. Yeah.
You know, and my wife, man, she's been adamant, honestly, probably like a year in after we got married, man, that she did not want to be resuscitated. Mm. And I'm like, so what does that look like? Give me some deeper like insight into that. Like, where does that come in? Do we try at all? And so we've subsequently worked out some of those details. But I honestly, if I'm being honest with you here on the podcast today, I honestly have not given a clear directive of what I want as far as do not resuscitate or how long or when or under what circumstances. So that's something that I was really challenged by coming up on this podcast. I really need to accomplish that in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's a great goal to have.
Yeah.
I think the next thing would be to get your financial matters in order.
Yeah.
And again, this goes back to any passwords that you have. I have a friend. I mean, he's so practical. He has a list on his computer of every account and every password. And that document is password protected. So the only password his wife has to know is that one password. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah.
And then she can go in and all his financials, all their investments, because he takes care of all that stuff.
Yeah.
All the property they own, all the, I mean, down to the credit card. He has everything listed, passwords, because he's very anal about things like this and he doesn't trust. So he has a different password for everything.
Yeah.
But yet that's there for her that when he passes, she only needs to know one password and she's got access to everything. And I thought that was pretty brilliant. And that was challenging to me because, you know, for my wife and I only use, I mean, there's probably only, I don't know, four or five passwords that I use.
Mm-hmm.
And she pretty much knows all of those.
Yeah.
So she can get access pretty easily as long as they don't, you know, knock her out for 2 or 3 minutes for not using the right password. But she can eventually figure out. But it did challenge me when I was thinking about him during listening to this was going, man, do I have it listed? Even, I mean, I just had a friend who was saying that a friend of his had passed away and they didn't know their iTunes account, username and password. And if you understand anything about Apple ID, that's a big deal because that can control a lot of things in your life.
Yeah, sure.
And just the headache it was trying to figure that out and trying to get that username and ID. So it's just the simplest of things like that, that you can write, put down in a document, put on your computer and say, hey, this is password protected. So nobody can get it.
Yeah.
If you're that paranoid that somebody's going to break in your house and get it. And then this is all the other passwords that you'll ever need from healthcare. I know that my healthcare is online, so I have to have a username and password for that. I mean, it's just all those practical things that you have written down that your significant other, your spouse can get to in the untimely death of yourself.
Well, you're making me feel incredibly brilliant right now, man, because I've surpassed and like usurped all of this issue in our house, man, because all of my 100% of the 15,000 passwords I have are all ABC123. So it's going to be incredibly easy for my wife to get in there.
And everybody else that just listened to this episode, that's all about it.
ABC. So that's one thing not to do. Don't have the simplest, most purest form of what passwords you're going to use. Protect them similarly with different passwords. Keep a record of what passwords they are. Put them all in one document and satisfy the security on that one with one password. And be sure that both you and your wife are aware of those. And if you have children, your child needs to be aware of it because suppose both you and your wife pass at the same time, in a car accident or airplane accident or house fire, any of those things. But these are very practical and like in your face. And you would think that they would be a first and foremost in thinking through this, but they're not.
Yeah.
So all your passwords and accounts and how many accounts you have, how many checking accounts you have, how many savings accounts you have. Do you have Roth IRAs.
That is that Texas.
Just, it is, man.
He cannot say it.
Bro.
Roth
IRAs. It's so funny, man, that you mentioned that. But there's words and phrases, man, that I run up against all the time that I just cannot get them out properly, correct way. Because I'm so used to saying them wrong. But just any kind of financial account, man, investments, things that you've had with your job, just gather them all together and take a week or two or whatever it takes and get all those accounts, all those assessments, all those values, all those balances, get them all in one place, man, and then protect them in one document with one password that makes sure both you, your bride, your children, and if you have neither of those, whoever the executor of your will and testament is. So I'm supposing that might be number four, is have someone in charge in the event that you and your wife are not able to.
Yeah, we, like in our trust, we have named an executor of our trust.
Mm-hmm.
So, or I forgot what the actual term is. My attorney would know, but for sure, you know, those are the important to your spouse. And in the case that you and your spouse are both deceased at the same time, that the whoever was in charge next had that information, or at least knew where to go get it. Because I'm telling you, it is a pain. And people who have been through this, who are listening to this right now, are going, absolutely. Yeah. This is, you know, this added to the grief that I was already going through. And I think that's the overarching theme of this, is don't add to the grief that's already there from your loss. Yeah.
So I know we're trying to get out of here, man, but just on a personal note, man, some of those things that, like, we fear, or general population of men that listen to the podcast might fear. You know, one of the fears that I have, and it's not necessarily with my immediate family, but just generally speaking, is no one will remember me. Mm. No one will miss me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I live my life daily, man. And I was just really thinking too, man, in the last year, I don't think I've done so well, but traditionally I live my life in a way to impart things that I acquire and knowledge that I get. I want to make sure that I'm sharing that and sharing my life and sharing my wisdom and sharing responses and all those kinds of things with the people around me. And sometimes I butt in places, man, that I don't belong. And some places, you know, people invite me in mm-hmm. for my advice, man. But I just want to, you know, remind you, man, that in the event that you're wanting to be remembered, man, you have a limited number of family members, but an unlimited amount of strangers and people you rub elbows mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. every day, man. And when you run into a situation where you could be impactful or give some suggestion or help or some money or rescue, you know, somebody from a situation, I really want you to contemplate and just go, is this a place that I could jump in and make a difference? Because even though they may not know how to see you or receive you once you pass, those things go forward. They'll always remember, man, remember that time when I was completely broke and I was sitting at that service station out of gas, 600 miles from home, and a guy actually believed my story, man, and gave me a tank of gas to help me get to where I wanted to go. Or you remember that time that we were arguing and it was you and I, my wife and I, and a stranger walked up in the middle of our conversation and said, hey, in 2 years, you're going to forget about this moment, but right now you're destroying each other. Just those moments, like if you feel led to walk into those moments, those are the kinds of moments that you want to walk into and strategically contemplate, how will I be remembered when I pass?
Yeah. And I think that leads me to just a real quick, precise quote or saying, don't be successful in life and a failure in death. Don't be a success in life and a failure in death. And that means that you were successful and maybe not as financial as you wanted to be, but man, in relationships, you were rich in work ethic and, you know, just choose whatever. I was successful in life, but when I died, I failed because I left the people that I loved the most a lot to deal with. And I think if we take that to the control room, wherever that may be, and we contemplate that, where are the areas that let me say it this way. Here's a great question to ask yourself. Where do I not want to fail in my death? Where do I want to be successful? Even if I pass away, that I left my family, my friends in such a way that they didn't have to deal with my failure. Because to your point, what do I want to be remembered as? I mean, you know, human nature is to remember the negative way more than the positive. That's just human nature. I mean, a man could do all kinds of nice things for you and bend over backwards and do things, but man, one bad thing and that's what you'll talk about. Well, so-and-so did this to me. I can't believe he said that to me, man. That's what we'll remember. And we'll negate every good thing he did. So as men who want to be great men, I would say we would go to the control room, wherever that may be, and say, where can I be successful in my death that currently I think I would fail in? And let that guide you to get a will, get your finances in order. We didn't talk about relational equity. Like what are those relationships that if I left tomorrow, I wish I would have said this.
Mm-hmm.
And I've dealt with that one more than I care to, as mm-hmm. far as like Stephen being in the position that I've been in. I mean, I've just been around a lot of death. I think I told you the first funeral I ever officiated was a baby. Mm-hmm. And how do you even deal with that one? So I've been around death quite a bit, and I just don't want to be, I don't want to be a failure in death. I want to be as successful in death as I was in life.
You know, you ruined me probably 15 years ago, man, sitting down, having a conversation with you. And I don't remember if bourbon was involved or a cigar involved.
A cigar, for sure.
But you told me, man, just keep in mind that both you and I have more life behind us than we have in front of us. And I wasn't ready to think about that at all, man. I felt like I was in my prime. And it's been 10 or 15 years ago. But I just remember you saying that.
Probably 10.
Maybe 10.
Yeah, okay.
And I remember you saying that and me just kind of sitting there for 3 or 4 minutes, like contemplating it and silent while you just looked in and was like, I got him. But I would encourage you to think like that.
Yeah.
That you have lived more life possibly than you have left in front of you. And so there's an urgency to live life of value going forward. We've all made mistakes and done stuff in our past, man, that we don't want to discuss or be proud of. But we have an opportunity today to begin to build our legacy and what it is that we would like listed on our tombstone.
Yeah.
So if you could just take 5 minutes as a result of this or 10 minutes to get your finances in order, get your passwords in order, find out your executor, plan out your directive as far as medical directive and do not resuscitate, all these things that we've talked about. And lastly, just to take 15 or 20 minutes, man, sitting down quietly and say, what do I want my tombstone to say? Like, in best case scenario, just what could I dream? And then every day that you live, live to produce that thing in your life.
In fact, I think a practical step, and you and I talked about this the other day, is if you've never walked through a cemetery, just go to your local cemetery, take an hour or two, and just read the tombstones.
Yeah.
It's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've done this before, not because I said I need to do this exercise, but because I've been at a cemetery, and I always found it fascinating when nothing was said on the tombstone. I thought, man, was there just nothing to say? I mean, did they just live a life of obscurity and no effect on anybody? And then there are tombstones that it seemed as if they ran out of room.
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of that's financial.
It is, you know, but it's also how they lived.
Sure.
So maybe a practical, I mean, as morbid as it sounds, I mean, just go to your local cemetery and walk through and just read what is said and go, what would I want to be said on my tombstone that could impact somebody looking at this 100 years from now?
Yeah.
And because as a man pursuing greatness, I think it's important that we're not just successful in life, but that we become successful in our death, because that's one of the arts of being a great man.
To join the Great Man community or to book Stephen, Anthony, or JT to speak at your man's event, go to greatman.tv. There, you'll also find incredible resources to help you become the great man you are made to be. The Great Man Podcast is a Wise Company production.